Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This morning, I was already up. I get up at 3:15 every morning, and I was checking the news, and I started seeing messages coming through from some of the groups that I'm on to say, this is what's happening. It wasn't in the mainstream press yet. And then I just thought, well, it's taken quite a while for Israel to respond to all of these rockets that have been sent over from Yemen. I mean, Yemen's been quite a player in this war, considering that they probably have the poorest people on the planet and a massive famine, and yet they're engaging in this war. So I'm trying to understand it, but also just to get the facts on the ground. Professor Eitan Gilboa, he's an expert on U.S.-Israel relations. He's also a senior research fellow at the Jerusalem Institute for Strategy and Security, and he joins me now. Good morning. How are you, Professor?
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Why do you think Israel took so long to respond?
Well, I think there were two reasons for that. One was the focus on other fronts. Lebanon, Syria, and Gaza. And the second reason was American pressure. The United States was supposed to take care of the Houthis. The United States built a coalition against the Houthis, but they were refraining from sufficient attacks, retaliation against not only the Houthis' attacks on Israel, but also on their attacks on shipping lanes in the Red Sea. So from, say, October 8 until now, shipping is disruption. The Israeli most southern port of Eilat has been paralyzed as a result of that. So Yemen launched about 200 ballistic missiles against Israel, 170 drones. Most of them have been intercepted, but 22 were able to penetrate Israel. So tonight, Israel decided enough is enough and attacked three ports in Yemen, including Hodeidah and Ras Issa. The attacks really took out of action tugboats. So it would take much time for Yemen to rebuild this infrastructure. And the other attacks were on electric power stations near Sana'a. But Houthis are still saying they will continue to attack Israel. They remain the only active military proxy of Iran. I don't believe that they would fire any missile or send a drone without authorization from Iran. So again, we go back to Iran, the head of the snake that is responsible for all those attacks.
So can we just backtrack a little bit? I remember speaking to you a year ago, actually, when we were talking about the what the Houthis were doing, and they had closed the ports, right? And all of a sudden, everything had to be redirected, right? All the cargo ships had to be redirected. The cargo had to go overland. A lot of it coming via South Africa, actually, which is one of the allies of the Houthis of Iran. Has anything changed with that, or is that still the status quo?
It is very strange, and this is why I was complaining about the American-led coalition in action.
Yeah.
So far, which required Israel to do this work on its own. This is the third Israeli retaliation against the Houthis, which means that international coalition has done very little. What is also very surprising is Egypt. Traffic through the Suez Canal has been cut by almost 60%.
Right.
And this is one of the main sources of income to Egypt. And yet Egypt has done nothing to stop the Houthis. The Gulf states, the Emirates, Bahrain, and others have also refrained from attacking or from retaliating to the Houthis. So this is why Israel still has remained alone in military effort to limit or curtail the Houthis attacks. I don't know. There's an expectation in Israel that things are going to change with Trump. See, the whole Middle East is waiting for Trump and is afraid of Trump because it seems that unlike Biden, Trump would use much more force, American force and coalition forces against the Houthis, and maybe this would help to shut the military operations.
Yeah, well, you see where the Democratic Party would, you know, they've been engaging with a philosophy of appeasement, right? I don't think that Trump has appeased a person in his life. I don't even think he knows the definition of the word. So I think that's a big change that would probably come.
I think this is the expectation here. We'll see. It remains to be seen whether this is going to change. But right now, this is what the Israeli Air Force done yesterday is very complex. You have to fly 2,000 kilometers. 2,000 kilometers. You have to refuel at least two times. And you send in dozens of combat aircraft. This is very complicated. We have done it three times. If necessary, we'll do it again. But as you mentioned, Yemen is one of the poorest countries in the world. There's much famine there. But wherever you find Iran, this is what you find. You find civil war, and there's still civil war in Yemen. Yemen is divided into northern Yemen and south Yemen. Northern Yemen is controlled by the Houthis, and you find poverty and famine, and this is wherever Iran is present. And this is why I said earlier, Iran has to be responsible and has to be punished. And it lost Lebanon. It lost Syria. It is losing Gaza. So Yemen remained the only military ally that they could use. But I believe that until Iran is going to be held responsible and punished, the Houthis will continue to challenge both navigation in the Red Sea as well as Israel.
Can we talk a little bit about Egypt and Egypt's role? You know, when one looks at the... Now, I'm kind of like zooming out and just looking at the things that I've learned along the way in the past year. You know, Egypt knew what was going into the tunnels. They knew because they knew and they didn't do anything to stop it. Now, supposedly there's this peace between Israel and Egypt. So that's the first thing. The second thing is they are allowing things that I wouldn't expect a neighbor in the time of peace that we have a peaceful accord with to behave in such a way, right? And they're also not even protecting their own interests. But most importantly, what I want to ask you is that when we see around the world, on university campuses, in streets, in main squares, we see in the Western world all these marches to free Palestine. Why is it that we don't see it in Egypt? We don't see it in Lebanon, Syria, Afghanistan. We don't see the Arab world marching for freeing Palestine. Why do you think that is, Professor?
Because most of the Arab countries couldn't care less about the Palestinians. And they have demonstrated that for a long time. What is happening in the West deserves another discussion. But I think that going back to a comment you've just made about Egypt, this is very important. Yes, Egypt knew about the tunnels, but the regime there is so corrupted that, in fact, the officers, Egyptian officers, made lots of money by allowing the tunnels to operate. This is one thing. The other thing, which is also problematic, is this: the peace between Israel and Egypt has been what we call a cold peace. It was a peace signed between leaders, not between the people. And there is much anti-Israeli sentiment in Egypt as well. What is really astonishing is Hamas is part of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yes.
And the Muslim Brotherhood is an organization that started in Egypt, challenged one regime after another. And even the present regime of Abdullah Sisi is still considers the Muslim Brotherhood as an enemy. And one has to wonder why they have been, in fact, helping Hamas rather than trying to limit Hamas. And this is one of the issues that is being negotiated right now in an effort to achieve a deal to release the hostages. What will happen to the border, the Philadelphia gate there between Israel and Egypt? Who is going to control that after partial Israeli withdrawal, which is anticipated as part of that deal?
Yeah. Professor Gilboa, well, that's where we have to leave it today. But I'm going to ask my producer to get you back. I do want to hear about your insights on what is happening in the West and why it is that we are not seeing protests happening in the Arab world as we are in the West. Thank you so much. That is Professor Eitan Gilboa, who is an expert on U.S.-Israel relations. He's also a senior research fellow at the Jerusalem Institute for Strategy and Security.